This is Rank and File Radio on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting at rabble.ca. Rank and File Radio is a weekly program covering labor issues from national and international perspectives. We are your hosts, Doug Nesbitt
and Andrew Stevens. On this week's show, we complete our interview with Roger Annis, a former member of the International Association of Machinists, who talked to Rank and File Radio about the CAW's proposals on strengthening the province's auto industry.
But first, here's this week's labor news update.
Taxi drivers in Halifax, Nova Scotia are considering unionizing. Gary Jollymore, an independent cab driver in the city, is leading the drive. He and six other taxi drivers approached the Canadian Auto Workers to help with the campaign. Approximately 1,200 cabbies work in the municipality. CAW Atlantic organizer Rick Rose said that there was likely enough support to begin a union campaign. Rose said that drivers would be organized by company rather than as a whole group. The owner of a casino taxi, Brian Herman, questioned the move, stating that he does not see the need for a union and was unsure of the potential consequences. Rose said that in his conversation with drivers, one of the most commonly cited complaints is fairness, not wages. Companies, he says, feel as though they can arbitrarily discipline workers without any recourse. While labor boards in Ontario, British Columbia, and Manitoba have ruled that the drivers are considered so-called independent contractors, but still qualified to join a union, it is uncertain what the legal framework in Nova Scotia will permit for these Halifax workers.
4,800 Canadian Pacific Rail engineers, conductors, and rail traffic controllers across Canada went on strike in the early hours of Wednesday, May 23rd. The union delivered a 72-hour strike notice on May 19th after a 95% strike vote on April 27th. The main issues include work rules, fatigue management, and CP's attempt to cut pensions by 40%. CP freight traffic across Canada has been shut down, but commuter trains in Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal will run on schedule. By midday Wednesday, the federal Tories were already threatening back-to-work legislation. Minister of Labour Lisa Raitt provided the same spurious justification she did with back-to-work legislation against Air Canada ground crew and pilots in March.
Our intention right now is to not have to introduce legislation. We just want to make sure that if we have to, that we have our notice period done. We believe that a deal at the table is the best deal that can happen. Remember, Canadian Pacific is a purely private company. We also have a larger railway, CN, that's able to provide service in the country too. We want to make sure that the parties have some room to freely collective bargain, because we believe that they should be able to achieve a deal themselves. But if they can't, we will act in the best interest of the economy.
The legislation is being prepared even though Raitt met with the union the day before the strike and said nothing about it. Despite her rhetorical acrobatics claiming non-intervention, her announcement will give CP Rail the opportunity to not negotiate with the union, thus leading to the back-to-work legislation. George Smith, a former vice president with CP and Air Canada, hoped that Ms. Raitt would not intervene. Now a faculty member at Queen's University, Smith said that it should be clear from experience for Ms. Raitt that, quote, "you can't legislate peace," and that the collective bargaining process must be allowed to work.
Two major Windsor locals have seen successful challenges to the established leadership. Windsor's Municipal Inside Workers Union, QP543, saw its president, Gene Fox, ousted by challenger Mark Vandervoort. Fox was president of the local during the lengthy 15-week Windsor municipal strike in the spring of 2009. A more high-profile defeat of establishment candidates happened in CAW Local 444, representing Windsor's Chrysler Assembly Plant workers and casino workers. The local, one of the most powerful in the CAW, saw a bitter conflict between candidates allegedly handpicked by the CAW executive and independents. Three establishment candidates were defeated, with three more elected by narrow margins. The independent candidates in 444 ran on promises of no backroom deals, no questionable appointments to union positions, and appeals to a healthier internal union democracy. In many respects, the 444 election represents a rebuke of Ken Lewenza's presidency of the CAW. Lewenza himself was former president of 444. CAW has toured Windsor and other auto-related Ontario cities promoting their new auto policy released in April. The document and the tour called for more government intervention to prop up the auto industry while downplaying the prospects for auto workers in the upcoming round of bargaining with the big three automakers this fall. Stay tuned for a critical look at the policy after the weekly news update.
Canadian Media Guild members at three St. John radio stations have delivered a unanimous strike vote in their attempts to bargain a first contract after unionizing a year ago. The union members, ranging from production and administrative staff to on-air hosts, work at CFBC, K100, and Big John FM, stations all owned by MBS, a media conglomerate with 24 stations in all three maritime provinces. According to the union, MBS has offered a pay scale starting at $22,000 and reaching a maximum of $28,500 by 2015. The proposed scale would be a significant wage cut for existing positions. Prior to the strike vote, the union had been putting pressure on MBS through a work-to-rule campaign, including not volunteering for community events commonly associated with commercial radio promotions and publicity. On May 10th, the union had arrived at a bargaining meeting to deliver a comprehensive offer, but MBS did not show up. The workers are in a legal strike position on June 1st.
Since 2007, the number of young people without work has grown by 4 million. Millions more were so-called disconnected youth, which have given up on the job search altogether. According to the International Labour Organization, the global youth jobless rate this year remains stuck at crisis peak levels and likely won't decline until at least 2016. In 2012, the report predicts that almost 75 million young people will be jobless. The unemployment rate for those aged 15 to 24 stands at 12.7%, unchanged since the peak of the economic crisis in 2009. Canada's unemployment rate for young people is 13.9%, with Newfoundland experiencing the highest rate at 20.2%. Alberta's youth employment rate, at 8.8%, is the lowest in the country.
The number of working poor in the Toronto region increased by 42% between 2000 and 2005, according to a report published by the Metcalfe Foundation in February of 2012. This group accounts for more than 70,000 adults in the city of Toronto and more than 113,000 in the region. These workers live in a region with the highest cost of living in Canada. The greatest increase occurred in Mississauga, Richmond Hill, Markham, Uxbridge, and King. In Toronto, most increases in working poverty occurred east of Yonge Street. A vast majority of the working poor are immigrants and located mainly in the sales and service occupations. Just over half the working poor have some higher education. Even though minimum wages grew by 8.9% between 1995 and 2005, inflation increased by over 22% during that same period. As Sandy Houston, Metcalfe Foundation President and CEO, states in the report, quote, "Employment is commonly understood to be the best antidote to poverty, yet the increasing numbers of people working and poor in the Toronto region paints a troubling picture."
Federal Finance Minister Jim Flaherty has taken aim at unemployed Canadians by telling employment insurance recipients that they risk having their EI benefits cut if they refuse to take any available job. Flaherty, who earns about $233,000 a year, told reporters, quote, "There is no bad job. The only bad job is not having a job. You do what you have to do to make a living." Even though 750,000 jobs have been created since the recession, the unemployment rate sits at 7.3%, a full point higher than before the 2008-2009 economic downturn. There are more unemployed Canadians today than 4 years ago, and more who have simply given up and left the labor force altogether. Making matters worse is that consumer prices have risen 2% in the last 12 months. Citing existing labor shortages in Saskatchewan and Alberta, Flaherty insists that the future of Canada's labor market will be one of shortages, not unemployment. The finance minister said, quote, "That means we're going to have to encourage more persons with disabilities to work, more seniors to work, more Aboriginal people to work, including young people. We need to get rid of disincentives in the employment insurance system to people joining the workforce." What the minister failed to say is that the employment insurance system is not a benefit provided by the government, but a social insurance system paid for by workers and employers.
The Canadian Labour Congress has recently released a guide for investigating corporate criminal negligence in the workplace, marking the 20th anniversary of the Westray coal mine disaster. As the CLC guide states, quote, "Corporate criminal negligence results from corporations wantonly and recklessly ignoring risks of bodily harm to their workers. It also applies to cases when companies do not plan sufficiently and do not put in place means to protect their customers or neighbors." In 2004, federal legislation was passed that holds employers criminally liable if they willfully fail to protect the lives and safety of workers. But as CLC President Ken Giorgetti argues, the provinces and territories rarely enforce the law. The 20-page booklet, Death and Injury at Work, A Criminal Code Offense, provides practical information for workers, unions, and police about how to investigate and enforce an employer's criminal negligence. According to the guide, police officers are obligated to approach corporate crime as they would any other crime. An investigation and full public inquiry of the Westray tragedy brought to light the extent of total disregard that management had for the safety of their workers. Despite these findings, no senior official, government representative, politician, owner, or corporation was ever held criminally responsible for the deaths of 26 workers. A copy of the report can be found at canadianlabor.ca. Our last story of the day is the Quebec student strike and the May 22nd rally in Montreal of upwards of 400,000 people. On Friday, May 18th, Quebec's Liberal government under Jean Charest passed Bill 78 through the National Assembly. The law places severe limits on freedom of assembly and speech, according to a wide range of groups and individuals, from student organizations and trade unions to constitutional and legal scholars. Montreal City Council also passed a law banning the masking of faces during protests. Bill 78 is widely understood to be the most severe repeal of civil liberties in Canada since the invocation of martial law through the War Measures Act in the October crisis of 1970. Bill 78 expires on July 1, 2013. The bill makes it illegal to form a picket or protest within 50 meters of an educational institution. It declares demonstrations of over 50 people illegal. For a demonstration to be legal, the march route and its start and end times must be approved by the police at least 8 hours before the demonstration commences. Violations of these provisions incur heavy fines, including $1,000 to $3,000 per individual, $7,000 to $35,000 per student leader, and $25,000 to $125,000 for student organizations and labor unions. Last but not least, education workers are prohibited from disrupting classes through protest or strike action. The passage of the law has ramped up opposition to the Charest government. On the 100th day of the student strike, a massive rally of 250,000 people marched through Montreal on May 22nd. Some reports put the figure at 400,000. This is unquestionably the largest act of civil disobedience in Canadian history. The rally went far beyond the ranks of the student movement, pulling in large sections of Quebec society. The student union class has called for the law to be openly defied, while Amir Kadir, the sole MNA of the left-wing Quebec Solidaire Party, has also called for Quebecers to ponder the necessity of civil disobedience. Events have also led Montreal's Transit Workers Union, QP Local 1983, to refuse driving buses used by the police to transport arrested protesters. While too early to tell the long-term consequences of Bill 78 and the future of the student movement, it is certainly the case that the student strike has morphed into a wider anti-government movement. It may spell disaster for Charest as an election looms in the fall. This is likely why new Minister of Education Michelle Colchen has stated on May 22nd that she was willing to negotiate with students again. It appears, however, she hasn't learned her lesson from her predecessor, Lien Beauchamp, who resigned her cabinet post and stepped down from politics altogether on May 14th after a tentative agreement with the student unions was rejected. In reference to the student organization class, Colchen stated, quote, "An association that calls for civil disobedience, the non-respect for the law, I have the impression they will not return to the table. Will they respect the decisions of the courts? Will they respect the law? I presuppose that they do not want to come back to the table." It appears that Charest's increasingly authoritarian government is still too arrogant to recognize how often it has been humbled these past 101 days by the Quebec student strike.
That's this week's Labour News Update. Stay tuned for more Rank and File Radio on CFRC 101.9 FM after these messages.
Keep your thumb on the pulse of global issues. Tune into Democracy Now!'s War and Peace Report, heard right here on CFRC 101.9 FM on weekdays from noon to 1 p.m. and rebroadcast again weekdays at 7 a.m. Democracy Now! Provides their audience with access to people and perspectives rarely heard in the U.S. corporate-sponsored media. Tune in or check them out online at democracynow.org.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Welcome back to Rank and File Radio on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting at rabble.ca. On May 13th, we had a chance to talk with Roger Annis, a labor activist and retired member of the International Association of Machinists. On April 30th, CAW President Ken Lewenza and CAW economist Jim Stanford met with Ontario Minister of Economic Development and Innovation, Brad Duguid, to present the union's proposals on strengthening the province's auto industry. The session was the first meeting with government officials since the launch of the CAW's Rethink the Economy, Rethink Canada's Auto Industry campaign on April 16th. Lewenza described the meeting as constructive and positive, with the presentation being well received by government officials. The campaign policy proposals included developing a transparent and consistent auto investment policy, building a green industry, negotiating Canadian manufacturing footprint commitments, in addition to a number of other measures.
I've been studying as well as writing about issues pertaining to the environment and then the relationship of that to the workers and the unions in the industries. It's a long-standing interest that I've had with respect to forestry in British Columbia, where I've lived at several different points in my life. And then, of course, all of the issues concerning greenhouse gas emissions, the Alberta tar sands. And so I noticed that a couple of months ago now, the Canadian Auto Workers Union published a very extensive policy paper on the future of the auto industry. Very interesting document, and I think it raises some very important issues for members of that union, but also workers in the whole labor movement to be thinking about. That is, how can we carry out the necessary changes in the world's economy today so that we don't take the planet to climate destruction? A big part of the difficult challenge that we have in the world as human society is converting, first of all, away from fossil fuels towards sustainable forms of energy, reducing our energy consumption, and a big part of that is transportation. And probably the private automobile has been one of the most destructive things that's been invented for human society in the past 100 years, because our whole society revolves around it now. And certainly all the leading climate scientists are saying that's not sustainable. We need to have cities, and we need to have a society in which our forms of transportation are environmentally sustainable. That means really redesigning our society's top to bottom in function of that. And it's really time for the workers in the transportation industries to take the lead on this, because we can't wait for the capitalists to do it. They are clearly taking the world to some very calamitous conditions, and we can't wait around to see if they're going to get it right or not. They're getting it wrong big time. And I was quite disappointed with what I read in the CAW document, both with respect to environment and transportation issues, but also how government in the future society that we aspire to, the society of social justice, can play a role in the economy and what its place. And I think both with respect to the role of government in building a different kind of economy and the role of the place of transportation in our future society, I think the union gets it seriously wrong on both cases in the document.
What is your analysis and criticism of the policy? Is it reflective of a historical trend within the CAW, or do you find that this is a response to current economic conditions that have affected the auto industry?
I think there's two things involved. One, the document is addressing what the role of government should be in the transportation industry in Canada. And essentially what they propose is to have more of the forms of financial subsidy of the auto companies as front and center in transportation policy. That's a very negative outlook and policy for the environment, but I also think it's very negative for our cities. We need cities and even intercity transportation that is increasingly less dependent on the automobile, more dependent on public transit. And yet the CAW document puts the private automobile front and center for future transportation policy in Canada, including, as they say, with the use of green automobiles, as they call them, which I think is a real misnomer. And I think it's unfortunate, because the concerns about employment and the future of the industry are real, they're genuine, they're important, and there's a place for transportation workers in the future. We need workers who are going to build the public transit systems that we need, to build the expanded train systems that we need intercity, build new forms of urban society where we don't have to jump in a car and drive for an hour to get to work and back, and so on. So there's an absolutely crucial role for workers in the industry today, and we got to get to work on that. And this document is not pointing us in this direction. It's proposing, one, that the private automobile continue to be the center of public transportation. There's barely a mention of public transit in the document. And number two, that governments should be offering subsidies or bailouts when conditions get tough to the auto companies in order to convince them to maintain their production in Canada. And this notion of, you know, capitalist governments using public funding to prop up, support in a million different ways the operations of the big auto companies and all the others, is really cuts across the grain. It really goes against everything that we've come to know through the Occupy movement of the different kind of social economy that we need, and a different government that, instead of bailing out companies, whether it's banks, auto companies, whatever, governments that actually play a leading role in building housing, building, improving education, redesigning our cities and building the kind of public transportation that we need, converting our energy supply systems. I mean, there's a huge role for government in all this, but it's got to be public government policy, not bailing out these failed capitalist enterprises that have taken us to this destructive point that we are there. So this is also, I think, a big problem in the document, that it's essentially proposing more of what's been going on for decades in Canada, which is to use taxation policy, or maybe use the low value of the Canadian dollar as tools to attract investment by the General Motors, the Chryslers, the Toyotas, and so on. That the time for that's over. The days of the private automobile are numbered, and we should be building a transportation system for the future that is for the public good, and really be winding down these GMs and Toyotas and all the others and what they have done as rapidly as we can. As I said earlier, the concerns about jobs are front and center, and of course, you know, making this shift in public transportation policy and in urban planning must take account of the jobs of workers presently in the transportation issues. They should not be simply tossed aside. On the contrary, the new public policies that we need have to have these workers front and center in the new kinds of production that we need for better transportation, alternative energy, and so on and so forth, but also for the expansion of public services that are so desperately needed today.
Compared on environmental issues, compared to, for instance, the steel workers, the USW, and the Communications, Energy, and Paper Workers Union, the CEP, how does the CEAW stand on these issues?
I think they're all having difficulty taking on this very big and complicated challenge that we have in the 21st century, which is how do we begin to build a society of social justice instead of the dog-eat-dog world that we have, and how do we wean ourselves off of the fossil fuel industry. So when we look at the Alberta tar sands, I'm not aware of a significant union in Canada right now which is calling for what's needed, that is, this monstrous, destructive thing that's going on in Alberta has to be shut down. There's no other alternative to that if we're serious about dealing with climate change. So, you know, what's the Energy and Paper Workers Union saying? They represent the workers in the oil industry. Well, the main complaint that I'm seeing is that the problem with the tar sands isn't the tar sands and what they're doing to the world's environment, but that the raw product produced by the tar sands is being exported out of the country, and instead we should be building refineries in Canada so that what gets exported from Canada is the finished oil product. This issue was raised recently by the mayor of Vancouver, because we now have a proposal for a vast expansion of an existing pipeline that's already bringing tar sands oil out to world markets through the Vancouver Harbour, and so Kinder Morgan wants to triple the capacity of that pipeline. So the mayors in the Vancouver region are opposing this, which is good, but on what basis are they opposing it? They're saying, well, we might have oil spills in the Vancouver Harbour or in the Strait of Georgia. Well, what about the damage to the the very biosphere of the Earth that the tar sands is creating, that's not being talked about. Another of the complaints by the mayor of Vancouver is that this product is being exported as raw bituminum, a raw oil product. It should be refined in Canada. Again, that argument, the tar sands are okay if we refine it in Canada, it's a ridiculous argument. A version of this same problem is happening with the forest industry in British Columbia. Historically, the forest industry has been a very destructive industry environmentally. You fly over British Columbia today, it's nothing but a huge clear cut. Canada has been a laggard on practicing a more sustainable forestry practices. So you don't go in and just clear cut a forest. You go in and do the kind of selective logging that's less destructive. But we haven't moved on this, and in fact, things are getting a whole lot worse in British Columbia and across Canada, because now we have the phenomenon of exporting raw logs, where there's an even greater market for going in and clear-cutting forests. So the concern here is not that we're exporting raw logs. This is being voiced by the Steelworkers Union. It's been a long-standing concern that they've voiced. Frankly, not done very much about it on the scale of things, but that's not the main problem with what's happening in the forestry in Canada, that we're exporting logs instead of finished lumber. The problem is that we're practicing environmentally destructive practices, that is, the companies are, in the forest, and there are alternatives, and that's what the union should be fighting for. They should be fighting for environmentally protective or sustainable policies, which, by the way, happen to be an awful lot more job intensive as well than this destructive practices that are going on now. So really it's a problem across the board. I think capitalism is getting worse in its environmental practices, and it doesn't matter what industry that you're in, and unions really have to be part of the fundamental political change in Canada towards an economy that is both socially just but also environmentally respectful and sustainable. And I think in Canada, we're still a ways yet away from that.
It's kind of off the track from the environment, but did you see any relationship between the auto policy being released now and the negotiations with the big three auto companies coming up in August and September?
Yeah, for sure, because there is serious and legitimate concern on the part of the CAW and on the members of the CAW that given the increasingly difficult economic conditions and given the increasing competition in the auto industry, where you've got every government entity in North America, including Mexico, now offering tax holidays and subsidies and this, that, the competition for auto investment is intense. And the companies have a big club against the workers in the industry, whether they're in Canada, the United States, or Mexico. And I'm sure that, rightly so, the CAW is trying to do something to produce a more favorable relationship of forces for workers in this country. The auto companies are hell-bent to get the kinds of concessions in Canada that they have achieved in the United States, and they're pretty drastic, they're pretty horrific. Starting wages now for auto workers in the assembly plants in the United States today now are $13-$14 an hour. How do workers earning $25 and $30 an hour compete with that kind of inequality? But I don't think the answer to this is for essentially now for taxpayers in Canada to be offering tax breaks, tax holidays, government money going directly into investment in the auto industry, but that's what's set out in the auto policy document of the CAW, going further down that road of assisting the auto industry with its investments. It's a road that has no end for workers. Well, it has a dead end. It's not a future, and it's all short term. What can we do for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years down the road to hold on to jobs? The concern is understandable, but it's not the fundamental change that's going to produce the kind of lasting and sustainable jobs that workers want to do.
You were listening to our interview with Roger Annis about the CAW's auto policy initiative. That's all the time we have this week. Tune in next Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. for more Rank and File Radio on CFRC 101.9 FM. Stay tuned.
Check it out. Move. If you got the nerve, lash out for your just desserts. It's not just the words. Some of y'all heads up in the cloud. I'ma bring y'all back to earth. It's black back to burn. Bullshit y'all talking about. Out your mouth, I'm not concerned. Cause y'all got to learn. It's y'all turn like Detroit Red. When his head had an ultra perm. The long walk, I burn your bare heels, so throw on your boots. The game camouflage like army suits. But I can see it more clear cause I came with the coupe in here. Ring the alarm, inform the troops. Send them out into the world, go to war on a fluke. Eye to eye with the enemy. You sworn to shoot. Now I'm coming at your neck, sick of hearing something wrong with me. Motherfucker, something wrong with you. When the cheek just way too smart to question. The enemy, the brothers of a dark complexion. The governments of the world is shark infested. They heavy on weaponry like Sharpton Heston, man. Look, it gets low, man. Low, now I'm talking about. Get it.
To the pigs is my basic statement. I spit street stories till I taste the pavement. Trying to stay out the pen where we face enslavement. Had a foolproof hustle till they traced the payments. I was gripping my palm around some shitty rum. Trying to find Psalm number 151. To forget what I'm owed as I clutch the Komodo red. Put down the bottle and come get the gun. Let's get off the chain like Kunta Kinte with a Mac-10. That one was gone like a dollar in a crack den. Steadily subtracting seeds and stems. Mind cloudy through the wheeze and phlegm. Numbing my brain off of that and the Jesus hymns. If we waiting for the time to fight these is them, telling us to relax while they ease it in. We're getting greased again. The truth I write is so cold it'll freeze my pen. My boots Riley, it's a pleasure to meet you. Never let they punk ass ever defeat you. They got us on the corner wearing pleather and see-through. All y'all's gold mines, they wanna deplete you. I ain't just finna rap on the track, I'm finna clap on the back. And it's been stacking to that 500 years before Iceberg ever leaned back in the lack. Before they told Rosa Black in the back. Before the CIA told Ricky Ross to put crack in the sack. And Gil Scott traded rapping for smack. This beat alone should get platinum. Them plaques. I'd rather see a million of us ecstatic to scrap. Cause if we bapping them back, we automatically stack. Check it out.
Like chewing C, reboots me, activating the community. Up in the bay like Huey P. They suck a free, it remind me of the BK. There's love for me, but the beast got it twisted. I'll untangle it. The black mind intertwined like the ropes they used to hang us with. This my favorite shit. I came in the game with a new way to spit. They got your questionnaire, who you banging with? Take it back to M-Hotep. Go a step deeper like a poor righteous teacher with holy intellect. Killer flow for all my real niggas left. And inform the failure to jig a boo that there's been a death. Once again, you can feel hip-hop. Underground, still about my guap. Gangsta like fuck the cops. Tell him Kweli, revolutionary MC. And that ain't about to stop.
I ain't rockin' with you. So what you gon' do?
It's my favorite mutant.
I ain't rockin' with you. Your logic does not compute.
My favorite.